Hey, everyone. We've got an awesome episode of Scrotus POTUS this week. Two fabulous comedians in Will Franken and Louis Schaeffer. We're going to talk a lot about things. We're going to talk about Donald Trump Jr., the State of the Union, how's America doing, the environment, North Korea, American retirement, and American obesity. Tackle it all. Share, listen, do whatever you want with the podcast. It's Scrotus POTUS.
She was working at Hooters when I met her. That much is true.
Okay. It is another episode of Scrotus POTUS. Cue the applause.
Yeah.
We've got some great guests today. Returning guest, Will Franken. Thanks for coming back, Will.
Thanks for having me back.
Right. And new guest, Louis Schaeffer. Nice to have you here, Louis. Why don't you tell us where in America you're from?
I'm from New York. I was born in Brooklyn and raised on Long Island and lived in Manhattan for 20 years. And so I'm like a Jerry Seinfeld Jew.
Yes. And how? And
or more like a Joan Rivers Jew.
I think Joan Rivers Jew.
Yeah. Yes. Someone whose father had a little bit of money, but the mother wanted the more money, so they moved out to a suburb where they couldn't afford it, and then the tension arose.
Hmm. Gotcha. And how long have you been in the UK now for?
I've been here for 17 years.
And how do you look at? I mean, because we sort of talk about the state of America, we always sort of go, it's the state of the union. How do you feel the state of the union is since you left? I mean, since you left and now where it's at? How do you find America?
I don't know. I think it's probably the same, because America does best when it panics.
And you think?
It's panicking now. It's panicking over a million different things, so it must be doing well.
Will, what do you think of the state of the union right now?
I think it's okay. I mean, you know, I'm still happy that Trump's in. I think he's doing a little bit too many of the chess game stuff that people always just playing chess. He's playing chess. I just wish he'd be much more direct about the nationalism, so we just know that he's on that. And I think if he just says it loud enough, people will just eventually get on board with it.
Well, I mean, he's tweeting. Is that's pretty loud? I mean, he's using Twitter unlike any other sort of president has, and he's using a device, a corporate device, unlike anyone else has ever done.
I wish he'd stopped it, though. To be honest. Yeah. Right. I'm not a fan of Twitter myself. I think it just reduces everything to one-liners and insults.
Yeah.
And I don't mind him insulting people. I find that endearing about him. I just wish he. I wish he wouldn't use that platform. I think he gives that platform too much legitimacy.
Well, it's a company that also loses money. It's not very effective as a company anyway, and has had their own dogged problems.
Right, exactly. But he's kept them alive. But you know what? FDR, he had an option to use Twitter, and he chose the radio.
He used the fireside chats.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, I mean, a lot of it, I think direct communication is always a good thing. Anytime that a leader can tell us and, you know, sort of give their own opinion, particularly with the fake news that we're all hearing from. And do you think, I mean, is America healthy, wealthier, and wiser now, or do you think that it's we've still got some troubles?
Well, I keep going back to the election. I mean, the election shows that America still had some health left in it, that it wasn't ready to go marching off into this transnationalist dystopia. And so, I know it was electoral college, popular vote, and all that stuff, but just by the fact that he won, puts me at ease a little bit. That they weren't ready to flush it all down the toilet, and they are sick of political correctness and all of this left-wing agenda stuff. So,
I think it's just the last gasp.
Before
the whole thing goes down the toilet.
Yeah, but that's your career you're talking about.
This is not the personal insults. We're only a couple minutes in.
That's your show, isn't it?
Yeah, like, no, it's not.
I'm Louis Schaeffer.
No, it's not. Other people are successful. I never say that other people aren't successful. I think the West is in trouble, and it doesn't matter. And Donald Trump is not going to save the West. He's not the man. He doesn't have a real ideology, and he doesn't know what they should be doing with the future. So how can he save the country?
He knows what needs to be said.
He knows.
I always go back to radical Islamic terrorism. The fact that he said that during his inauguration, because there's a lot of talk. Oh, he's not going to mention. Oh, he is going to mention. Oh, he's, you know, and the cabinet and, you know, Bannon's telling him one thing and some people. But the fact that it came out of his mouth during the inauguration, I think, was seismic.
No. I don't think it was.
Well, who else was going to say it?
No one else was going to say
it. Nobody else was going to say
it. But the fact is, he said it. He got a rise out of people. He just says things. If it gets a rise out of them, and it's somewhat successful, he'll say it again. He didn't believe in any of that stuff. He didn't.
But why is he choosing conservative platforms rather than liberal platforms?
I don't know why. But I guarantee you, if he had said, candy and flowers, and people had gone, yeah, candy and flowers, he would have said, we're going to candy and flowers. This country needs candy. That's all Donald Trump.
Needs to do it, though. That's the thing. He just needs to do it now.
He's not going to do it because he's not a man who can do that stuff.
Do you think that's it, or do you think that he's not being allowed to?
I don't think you could stop Donald Trump from doing anything.
Are you crazy?
No.
Russia.
No, I don't think Russia can stop him from doing
anything. So you're on the sort of mantra that this whole thing is going to collapse anyway and nothing he can do to save it, America is going to fall?
Especially not him. He's not going to be able to do it. He said some nice things that a lot of people agree with. He said some things that people didn't agree
with.
Like
what?
Like, I'm with you in a lot of the different areas that he said. He said, you know what? A country has to defend its borders.
Yes.
And so that's a positive thing. But he wasn't thinking about that. He just said it, and he said it to the type of people who would be happy to say it, hear it, and then he said it.
So do you think he's playing on this sort of town hall hyperbole, where
yes.
he's just doing with this sort of big echo chamber? So do you actually think there's any substance to the man then?
No, I don't think there's any substance. The same way there's no substance to the man.
And what about Obama?
It's the same thing when he was in New York. He took a beautiful old building and he destroyed it to put a new building. And he basically said
the Grand Central thing.
No, that's one thing that he did. That wasn't even that beautiful. The building that he did at the Hyatt Hotel next to. But he took the Best & Company. Was it the Best or the Bonwitel or one of the? And it was beautiful Art Deco building. And he said there's no market for it. Okay, he didn't care. He didn't care one way or the other.
There's something about the American spirit.
Yeah.
That I think, and I don't want to talk about William Blake too much, but I have been doing that documentary on Blake, and Blake wrote this great piece on the American Revolution, and for him it was about, he captures the American spirit, that there's something in Americans, they just like to fight. Like, the real American thing, the whole rebellion against King George, in a sense, was about, you know, fuck it with the taxes, fuck you.
Yeah,
and there's
a
little bit of that, and Trump represented that, and Trump is also, I admit, he's very gaudy. We were just talking about Hooters before the taping. That's what I like about it. It's
the
a
Hooters
gaudy,
president.
Trashy
restaurant.
And he's a bit like that with his steaks and
I'm
glitz.
Not a big fan. I mean, I'm not a big fan of anyone who eats steaks well done.
Yeah. Oh, that's the only way to eat them, I think. Mm.
Jesus Christ.
I think you eat them while the cow is alive.
Yeah, that's exactly.
If you're
going to
show
farm,
your commitment.
That's how I would
is
kill them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Enoch Powell.
What?
You say Enoch Powell.
I didn't say Enoch Powell.
Did you not say Enoch Powell?
No, I didn't say Enoch Powell.
You're just hearing voices in your head.
So
Trump's also, his approval rating, apparently, they're saying was 36%. And he's saying, no, it's fake news, 40%. But still, that's pretty low.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, is it something to worry about? And do approval ratings even matter? Because little things can change it. He's already in, so what's it going to do?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I had a gig in a place called Frinton-on-Sea. I don't know if you've heard of it, but... It was funny because I had a driver and the geezer was like really like, you know, slagging off his missus, and for like an hour and a half, that's what I heard. And then once I got to the gig, it was very, very middle class. The tone completely changed and they were talking about Trump. And one of the guys said, oh, there's an American that lives out here. He's from Brooklyn and an actor, and he actually likes Trump. He voted for him. And I said, where the hell is this guy? I want to meet him. Yeah. He's an actor from Brooklyn, likes Trump. And then he ended up not showing up. But the other guy said, oh, you voted for Trump. Well, enjoy it while you can, because he'll be gone in less than a year with the whole Russia thing. And mm-hmm. I listen to them, go, you actually believe all this stuff, that he'll be gone in less than a year. I think, no, he's gonna do...
Well, it's like Theresa May, you know? How popular was she? And now she's not. And I think that could happen with Donald Trump. He could pull it out.
Yeah.
He was elected solidly, though. She wasn't.
May.
Yeah.
May's not going to last.
I don't think May is going to last either. I don't think May is going to last till December.
If they were
May
smart.
December.
Yeah.
Is that a joke?
That I just thought of it, but yeah, there it is. That's
what we do here.
Yeah.
You know, Joe, I totally see that. If we can divert to May for a second.
Yeah, sure.
May is endemic of this problem that the Republican stroke conservative stroke Tories have had for some time, which is they don't actually want to stand up for their principles. So Corbyn goes off and speaks at Glastonbury. And it's almost as if May's trying to get the Glastonbury crowd too. And we saw McCain with Obama; he was doing this. Right. I'm against global warming too. And it's like they sell out their, they're afraid to own up to the fact they're conservatives. And I think what she needs to do is get somebody else within the Tory party to step up, or it's going to be Corbyn, and then we're all screwed.
Well, I mean, because I think her problem is also her likability factor, which is serpentine at best.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
And you wonder, you know, because even my daughter said, you know, does she have 101 puppies? And I was like, that's pretty funny. But
the other question is, the other problem is that American political system is not like English political system or British political system, is that she only has to make a small group of people happy or unhappy for her to be out. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, in order to be kicked out, has to go through a whole impeachment process, which is almost impossible to
and
do.
And I mean, he's savvy enough that I don't even think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to come a floating of it. I mean, there are certain things to say. I mean, you've got... you know, Noam Chomsky did this whole article in the Times, which, you know, take it from whatever
side
you want.
He's still alive.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
He just never quits.
Pride of Canada.
He's a Canadian.
Yeah.
And he comes to our country.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine? It's like all the actors and comedians and everyone else who leaves Canada. Because it's... Anyway, I won't get into that. But the doomsday clock has been moved up. It's closest to, you know, the midnight that it's been since 1953. Mm. You've got William Perry, who's a retired nuclear strategist, who basically says we're at the closest now at the end of times. And it's not really Trump's fault. It's some frisson that happened somewhere, because a lot of times that America has now modernized the nuclear capabilities to three times what they had like 20 years ago.
What America has?
Yeah.
I heard they were all rusting out.
That's modernizing it. They've been modernizing the hell out of them.
Oh. Well, since Trump?
Well, since it started with Obama, but it started in and since they've been getting it. But the problem is, what happens is you have all these other people that are like, crap, the only way to get in is a first strike.
Yeah.
You know, because Russia's got an aging thing. If Russia did have a problem, and there was a problem in Ukraine, the best option is for them to throw a first strike, because America is going to just level you. Mm. So you might as well throw one out first. Right. And that's obviously the problem that people worry about North Korea. But I mean, is this something that we have to worry about? Is this nuclear, you know, are we at this sort of worse than a Cold War at this point?
Well, Michael Savage, he's a guy who was, are you familiar with him at all?
No.
You must know him, right?
Yeah.
He's the guy in America. He's banned from coming to Britain because they needed to balance the sheets. He wasn't even planning on coming here.
All right.
And it was like, we will not allow hateful people like Imam Hadabadaba and Imam Hadabadaba and then and Michael Savage too. And he was like, and so one day I turned on the radio. He was like, I can't even come to this country. But why did I bring him up? Oh, because he has this great quote about nuclear war.
Okay.
And that he said it's different if somebody like Iran gets a nuclear weapon, because at the end of the day, you know, with the whole Cold War thing, the Russians and the Americans, at the end of the day, it was all an economic ideology difference, and they're still of the family of man. But if you allow a country that sanctions suicide bombings to get their hands on one of those, that is endgame. And to some extent, I think the North Korean guy too. I think it's not just communism with him. I think it's,
well, he just threatened to annihilate the United Nations.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, which I don't mind. It's not that way.
You know, like it's a pretty bold thing. It's like, okay,
yeah, but it's not
all
bad.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead. Yeah. You annihilate the United Nations.
Yeah. I think the problem with the nuclear weapons is not that they're going to attack us, but is that we cannot attack them. And I think that bothers America, that there's another nation that we can't go into.
Well, I mean, North Korea. I mean, we'll get into it, but how do you solve a problem like North Korea? Because, you know, they've got the fourth largest army in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They will basically reduce Seoul and Beijing and like a whole bunch of other northern cities to just a fiery mess.
Yeah. Right. And the problem is?
Well, the problem is, you know, you also still have China, who is now basically takes around, 85-90% of their imports?
Right.
So what's the I mean, I think Trump now, what they're trying to do is the same thing that they did to FIFA.
Mm-hmm.
Find the money, find out where the money is, and then just get everyone. And I think that's what America, the way
America should handle it is through BDS, is boycott, sanction, and divest Israel. And because that's where all the problems
come
from.
What are you talking about?
Yeah? You think Israel's the problem?
It's always the problem.
What are you? See, are you banging an 18-year-old girl now?
And is enforcing fox hunting and building more social housing. Oh, that's what Corbyn would say.
Yeah.
I was making a joke.
You were joking. Okay.
He's a Jew. He can make fun of Israel.
Well, I wasn't even making fun of Israel.
A lot of Jews in the world today. Apparently.
I wasn't even making fun of Israel. I was just making fun of
the boycott.
Making fun of like the solution. There is no solution to North Korea except to just let them.
Well,
rot.
You show strength. I think.
How do you show strength? What are you supposed
to
do?
Well, look. The Americans military just approved. It's like funded sex change surgery for military officers. This is not a way to win anything, is it? It's a little bit silly.
No.
Well,
you think the military is giving into too many left wing?
Absolutely, and I think it has for a while. I think you got people running the Air Force that have no idea how to fly a plane. It's not good. They don't actually have warriors in there anymore, and it's like.
You're not saying it's become corporate, the military, has you?
Absolutely. Yes, it has. Corporate and diversified.
Backhanding, and small deals, and soldiers who are being treated as fodder, and when they come home, not giving solutions, and going on rampages.
And telling them things like, to really fight the war, we need to have transgender surgery for the lieutenants. And it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Well, why do you think that the military then is sanctioning then this transgender surgery? Do you think that there's... Is there a public cry, or is it something going on with soldiers that maybe we're just not addressing?
I think, you know what it is? I think it's the same thing that happened recently with the TFL, where they decided they weren't going to use terms ladies and gentlemen anymore.
Yeah.
That it is, and by the way, it's funny because I was watching Ayn Rand's last speech last night. It was 81. Ayn Rand gave this great speech where she was talking about businessmen have kind of sold out their they're guilty about being capitalist. They're shamed about being capitalist and rich. So they kind of do these things that they think are going to placate everybody. But I think TfL is a good example where nobody's going to not use the transport for London. It's like what people aren't going to get on the tube because they say, ladies and gentlemen, they were doing fine. It's just somehow it got in their head that they needed to take some kind of stand to be cool, I guess. Yeah.
Well, they could be cool, and maybe, I think, what does it say, like 40% of the subway stations or tube stations don't have wheelchair access? Maybe a start there.
Excellent point, yeah.
Maybe you don't worry about ladies and gentlemen. Maybe you worry about, hey, can you make it onto the tube? Maybe people, you don't have to take a transit vehicle, you know, an extra five stations away.
Yeah. Well, maybe people are only doing what they can do. It's like with North Korea. There's no solution to North Korea except to let the country rot.
But it already is rotten. I mean, it's rotten. Yeah. They've got the highest rate of meth addiction in the world.
North Korea?
Yeah.
Wow, you know all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Missouri. Well, it's because it keeps them fed.
Yeah.
You know meth heads. They'll work hard. You don't need much.
Yeah.
But the problem is it's spilling over to northern China.
Yeah.
And so the Chinese are like, whoa, what are you doing? You can't get all these people. But
I just associate meth from where I come from.
Well, heroin's a big problem. We've got into that, but heroin's a huge problem in America right now.
Why does America have to deal with North Korea?
But that's cool, though. Heroin's cool.
They're threatening America, but America, I think because of the protection that they've offered to South Korea, that we will be there. You've got other countries that have signed up. Australia is basically, if South Korea gets attacked, Australia is obliged to go in. There's other treaty nations that are obliged.
But what would South Korea ever do for us? I never met a more ungrateful nation than South Korea. The United States basically made that country one of the richest countries in the world. And it's almost as bad as my ex-wife.
Okay. Well, hey.
Sorry.
But I mean.
That's not even true.
That's also. That's another thing that Trump is big on. Trump was addressing it, and he was addressing the $40 billion trade deficit.
Right.
He's like, we did build this up, but now they're taking advantage of us. There's $40 billion in trade.
Is that what South Korea said?
No.
That's what Trump said.
That's what Trump said.
Yeah. God bless the guy.
God bless him.
Yeah, God bless him.
And so he's like,
he said, why should we defend you when you're sitting on our cash? Why should we be spending our money?
Yeah.
This has been going on. I'm not as old. I mean, I'm old, and I remember thinking about this about 40 years ago. I'm saying, why should we defend the world? Why should America defend the world when they're making money off of us?
Yeah.
Just like my ex-wife.
Hey.
No, sorry.
The other side of it then is, too, that people, the conspiracy of the saber rattlers might say is Trump using the North Korean initiative as a means of negotiating the South Koreans, basically saying, look, we're here, you know?
Yeah.
He's using this, he's using the threat of war and sort of the saber rattling of them, basically to say, look, we're here to protect you, but this $40 billion is got to get fixed.
Well, do you know something? If he's doing that, more power to him.
Well, I don't necessarily know if that's the case.
No, North Korea's been a problem for
a long time before he came into office.
I know. I'm not saying it's not a problem.
Yeah.
But if he's using the North Korean problem to get money out of South Korea or to reduce America's balance of trade deficit, then I say that's actually smarter than I thought.
I think a lot of people are sort of underwhelmed or surprised just how actually. I mean, he's a businessman. He's a negotiator.
Yeah.
He's in his 70s. He's been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
So he's, if you've read his books, it's the whole sort of gameplay.
Not
that he
quite
does.
As successfully as he gives the impression of.
No, of course
what
not.
What are you talking about?
I mean, he's not.
How can you say that?
No, I can say that because somebody like me knows unsuccessful.
He's not quite as successful. So you think he's an unsuccessful man?
I think it's like my the old Jewish saying is, how do you make a small fortune? Uh-huh. Start with a big one. He's had a
There's
lot.
There's something to be said that, financially, I mean, his casino dealings have, I mean, the big thing, I mean, that also that people are upset about is he opened, in his presidency, opened another Trump hotel in Vancouver,
yep.
Nonetheless, heroin capital.
Well, there was the one in Washington, D.C. as well, right?
I thought there's the only one. This opened because they had to send the State Department, had to pay for rooms to pay for the kids.
Yeah.
So I think there's sort of, you're like, okay, when is public money going into private? Should that sort of happen? But is he right to still run and still have his empire going, or is he just furthering his empire, his business empire, with his presidency?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm on lots of mailing lists. I made the mistake because I voted for the man from over here, the absentee ballot. But I get about 5 emails a day. MAGA hats are on sale, and William, you still have not responded to our important message. You know, I don't know if you get the. You didn't vote for him.
No, I didn't vote for him.
But you get them all the time, and it's tacky.
Sure.
But then again, you have to think,
is it coming from the Trump organization or coming from?
Sometimes it's coming from a guy named Bob. And I think, who the hell's Bob? And I clear, Hi, it's Bob here. You still have not applied for the NCRS special coffee mug.
You know? So do you think that they might have taken voter data and shared it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. No, I don't think that they did. I think it's the campaign. I think they set up another operation for this campaign thing with an opt-in. I guarantee you that I'm not guaranteeing, but they could have broken data protection laws. But when people sign up for it, they probably in the small print was, you've allowed us to send you stuff, other stuff.
What's that story with Truman? When Truman left office, he actually had to write his memoirs because that was the only way he had to make money.
Yeah, people didn't make money back then from politics.
You got done with the president and you were just...
But then other ones did make money from politics. Well, a lot of them didn't make
money
from politics.
But that's why sports...
Well, I mean, a lot of them make it on the public speaking circuit as well now. You've got, the David Camerons and the Tony Blairs making a fortune off of the public speaking. And
Obama's.
Obama as well.
$70 million for an advance?
$70 million? That's a...
$70 million for his
book advance.
That seems
pretty high. No. Oh, for his book advance. Yeah. Oh, for his book advance. No, let's get into Donnie Jr. So Donnie Jr., Donald Trump Jr., is what he did wrong. Was this wrong? Should he have done this?
It's not illegal, if you're talking like legalistic terms. No,
I'm not a lawyer. All I know is this: is that
you're Jewish.
Donald Trump is a very good father, because his children are almost identical to him, and that's a sign of good parenting. And you're a parent, okay? Mm-hmm. When you have a child, and when they start imitating daddy, it means that daddy's giving them a lot of love, so I got to give that guy credit.
It is. I agree with you. Everything I've seen with him and his grandkids, to me, when you got a good heart, a lot of it, that starts right there, and there's a lot of, as we say, people that you've seen in politics, you sort of look, and I've known a few of their kids where the kids hate their dads, or their suicide and drugs and everything like that, because as you say, and it could be that he comes from outside of politics.
I'm not sure, because look at Rudy Giuliani. I mean, he was a prosecutor. And you do his New York City mayoral inauguration speech, and his child is running rampant, bad parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump is a good parent.
Yeah.
Is a good parent. But will he be? Remember, up until about 6 months ago, the United States wasn't at war with Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, we are now.
Yeah, but you know why? Well, you know why. Because it was invented in October when it became apparent she was going to lose.
Yeah.
So that is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Oh, I'm saying that people didn't hate. They didn't hate the Soviets.
No,
they didn't hate
the Red
Russia.
Brand
right.
New.
But so you have this. I mean, he basically said. So he takes an email.
Mm-hmm.
This person says, "I've got dirt. Great. Yeah. That's great. Let's set up a meeting."
Sure.
Even Trump and everyone's verified. They go to the meeting. It turns out like Jared Kushner walked right out as soon as he got in there, because it turns out it was this woman wanted to restart that Russian adoption program that Putin shut down.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, how'd you like to adopt our kids again? It's I thought you had dirt. Oh, no, we got dirt. But what about the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you adopt 100 kids, then maybe we'll tell you something.
Yeah.
So, but I don't, but everyone's now, you've got all these people leading and going, well, it could lead to impeachment. It could, and it's like, how can that be that bad? I mean, he's looking for dirt. He was trying to help his dad.
I mean,
it's just,
you got 300 million people in America, and it's just, if you get out there with the memes quickly enough, I mean, like people, like the guy at Fritton, going, well, enjoy it while you can because of the whole Russia thing. And it's like, you hear these people, you don't even care. You don't really care about the Russia thing. Nobody who goes on about Russia really cares.
Yeah, but they didn't care about Monica Lewinsky either, and they impeached the guy over that.
Well, yeah, I was getting a blowjob in the office. That's different. If Trump got a blowjob in the office and lied about it, I think a lot of people that get it, it's time to go.
Forget about it.
And especially is
that worth than being a traitor to your country?
If indeed the man is a traitor, but is he a traitor for wanting? Someone says, "Hey, we got some dirt." And interesting enough, Putin talk or Russia. Or if you saw, there was a Trump was on the Air Force One, and he had this talk with all the journalists.
Yeah.
And he at first they said, "Okay, this is off the record." And then after the talk, I guess Trump was so nice, all these journalists were like, "Oh my God, he's really funny and outgoing."
Yeah.
But Trump said, "Look, I was told that I was not supposed to talk about this." And people said, "Oh, you won't approach Putin." And he said, "Look, I knew I had to do it quick. So I did within 20, 25 minutes. I asked him."
Yeah.
And he said, point blankly, no. And then, so I said, a couple minutes later, I figured out a way to ask him again.
Yeah.
And again, point blank, no.
Yeah.
And then he says to the journalist, he goes, what point? Like, what point do I go? He goes, "Dude, do you want me to get in a fist fight with him?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And you sort of, you go, "Look, I've asked the guy." And then he said, interesting enough, a Russian guy came up to me later and said, "Look, if we did it, you wouldn't know."
Right.
Yeah.
And Trump's I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Like, if you did do it, we wouldn't know if you did it.
And also, do you think Putin's going to admit that he did it?
No, of course not.
He's a spy.
Yeah.
But I always had this thing about, like, I had this girlfriend one time, and she was always I never cheated on her, but she was persistent that I cheated on her. And when a woman comes at you enough and consistently with this bullshit, you start to act nervous. I'm one of those people, I just start to, my head twitches, and I'm like, I told you I didn't, and I won't make eye contact, and then I know I didn't cheat on her. And I think that's what's going on there. It's like, what else do you want me to, how much can I prove that this didn't happen?
Well,
it's going to go on forever with
usually
this.
Usually in my past, I've also found that the people who accuse of infidelity are the ones perpetrating it.
Are the ones you're possibly
so
well.
It's usually done from a paranoia, from self-interest that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. to get some dirt on
Hence
you.
Hence Hillary Clinton and the whole her selling uranium thing. I mean, this is all coming out from, you know, that she sold uranium to the Russians through the, was the Clinton Foundation, right?
Okay. So I don't know about that.
I mean, there's such filth and dirt on them. And for some reason, you'd think, what, the pot calling the kettle black with all this Russia stuff.
But the idea that the president has to ask the guy whether he's been doing something, it's not up to the president to ask. The president just meet the guy and tell him what he's going to tell him and find out what he's going to tell him.
I am all for a strong, I'll even throw the UK in there, UK-US-Russia alliance.
Right.
I am totally in favor of that.
Anytime everyone gets along, it's always a good thing.
Absolutely. Not to mention, if you've got a nationalist Russia, and I know that word means Nazi now, but actually it means somebody who believes in, you know, the spirit or culture of their nation. If you have Russia's, that's why they don't like Russia. Putin is a nationalist.
Yeah.
He's
an effective dictator, too.
He's got a horrible past, I agree. The fires and stuff from before.
A lot of journalists that disappeared.
A lot of journalists disappear.
Hundreds, even thousands, they
That's
say.
Not why they don't like Putin. They don't like Putin, and they don't like Russia, because Russian people are, they're not like Americans or even the English people. They are an isolated country. It's like a guy in a tent on a plateau in an open field. He only has two ways to defend himself. He either acts crazy or he takes over more land. And that's why Russia is a super dangerous country. They are mental. They're not like us, and you can't be friends with them. You can have a relationship like we had during World War II, but even in the best of times, it's best to stay away from those
people.
I'm
with you on the women. I would never go out with a Russian woman as a boyfriend-girlfriend thing. Mine. Sex, maybe, but the whole, there's a little bit of that. My Western hero, why don't you earn more money? Why can't you earn more money? That's what I would feel I would get.
I don't know.
But you also have to look that there are similarities between America and Russia, in that in the Russian Revolution, when you have the sort of the old empire, when they sort of toss them away, the old empire was basically just the European power. And I think what they were saying is the Russian people felt that they were losing their nationalism. They were losing it. Mm. And part of the communist rush and the Russian Revolution was to get rid of these heathens, get rid of these European powers.
Right, in 1917, the revolution.
Yes. Yeah. So it was because of all the ties, and you've got this sort of ideology of communism, these new ideas that we can take care of everyone, and then you realize, corruption and people are just by nature assholes.
I don't know. I think you're looking at those people through our eyes. They're not like us, the Russians.
How could you even say that?
They're not like us.
What are you talking about?
They're not like us. They have no natural defenses. They're a jittery race of people. They are in a flat plane. There's nothing but flat from here to forever. And they're living right in the middle. And they've had constant... The Vikings came in, the Genghis Khan came, whoever these people came in. They're always coming in. And so the only way they could defend themselves is by being full-on proper mental and acting mental. They don't care about acting mental. They don't care about acting belligerent. They just want to act strong. It's not like America, which is nice. Let's be nice to people. It's not like
No, America's about fighting.
It's also about being nice
to
people.
Throwing down
it's about giving. It's about giving people their freedom and giving people food and a bit fighting.
Well, Sting would ask, do the Russians love their children too?
Of course they do. Of course they love that. That's one of the most.
Do they though?
Of course they
do. I mean,
love
you're just you're making it sound like they're totally different, and they don't.
No,
know
they
what
are different.
Arms and legs.
They are different, but they love their children. The question Sting should have asked is, do the Russians love our children? And they don't. They don't love our children. They love their children. I'm not saying they're going to kill our children, but they're not thinking about our children.
You're speaking very collectively here. For a man who does not like Russians, you're
I'm speaking collectively for myself, for me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's move into another country then, because we've got Macron, the president of France. He's 39 years old, pretty much the same age of Trump's kids.
Yeah.
And from all accounts and from everything, aside from what he maybe said to the president's wife, which could have been taken out of context, all accounts, it's turning out like a very good trip, and it's almost that France is building this new bridge that could be the new special relationship from this whole trip. Did it? Any thoughts of?
Well, it makes me a little bit nervous because I was a Le Pen fan.
Okay.
And then I thought, okay, so 2016, they let us have Brexit and Trump, but they're not going to let us have Wilders and Le Pen. That ain't going to happen. It's like not a third time. So
who is they?
You know, the powers that be, whatever. They're going to double down, make sure Le Pen doesn't make it number three, or that would have been Wilders number three.
Right.
But Macron, I don't really follow him that much, but. I'm a little bit skittish of the fact that he says, because again, one of the most revolutionary things Trump said as well was, we're going to defund the United Nations of billions of dollars of this climate change nonsense. And I just thought, wow, that's a I never thought we were going to break out of that stupor.
Mm-hmm.
So when he says, when he's hanging around with Macron, he said, well, we'll talk about the climate thing. I thought, no. You're a conservative. We voted for you for these conservative reasons. You need to say why the climate change is bullshit and just stay on that. You don't need to rethink it. I don't want to have some kind of deal. Like, let's get done with it. So I'm a bit nervous about that. I don't want the Macron thing to.
Well, Macron said he said I'm the new bridge to Europe, or I'm the bridge to Europe through him. He listened to me. They talk global warming. Mm-hmm. He tried to charm him on it. Trump basically said Paris Accord sucks because you know, you've got India and China have no limits and they can just keep dumping and polluting. So why would we want to do that? Why would America want to lose to a competitive advantage to them for economic and for steel and for everything else. Yeah. If they're not, we're happy to keep limits, but it has to be limits.
I think the problem with Trump is he didn't get a consensus in his own country for this move. He just said, this is what we're doing. I'm the president. And
but
this
the Paris
we're doing.
Was, isn't the consensus thing. His election, though?
No, it wasn't his election because most people, even
but
though
no
he was elected.
There's no consensus in
the science
either,
there's by no, the way. There's no, but no, I know, but there's no consensus among Americans that we should eliminate the Paris Accords. But the thing, reason why Macron is siding with Trump has nothing to do with us being friendly with Trump, him being friendly with Trump or friendly with America. I think it's a Brexit thing. I think he's just saying it's putting more pressure on Theresa May and the Tories here.
That's why she's got to pick a side ASAP if she wants.
Well,
to
I mean, I think
it doesn't matter if she picks a side or not. It's that what France has done is they said, look who my new best friend is.
Yeah.
It's Donald Trump. You have no friends, England, so you better be nice. I guarantee you, there's going to be a war. I'm going to guarantee.
Okay, I guarantee a war. Okay,
between Britain. And Europe
within six years, a war
when Britain says we're not giving you the money,
and what do they have?
What they will develop an army just to mess up.
Well,
English.
I mean, Germany has a modern army that's used for patrolling immigrants, but no one really has an army.
No,
they have. Do you think England has an army?
But I mean, okay, look at it. If there was going to be a war, it's going to be England versus Spain. If it is, then it's going to be Gibraltar.
Yes, okay, that's one.
So, but those are two NATO countries, and America is going to vainly go, yeah, just stop.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Because Spain, again, if they wanted a war with Britain, they would get trounced quicker than they could
that's
even
one
imagine.
Country, but it's going to be France and Germany and Spain.
Against
Britain.
I mean, I don't know if this is a joke.
I don't know.
Are you actually doing jokes? I don't know if this is a joke.
I don't know if this is
France
true.
And England are going to go
just
to war.
Taking, I just said 6 years, maybe 10
six
years.
6 years, could be
but
10.
But I think it's going to happen because there's money involved. And you know what happens when there's money involved? Is that people get bad feelings when there's money involved. And there's money involved with Europe wanting money for Brexit. They're going to want money. And England's
going to... And they're going to punish their own people to pay for it. They're
going to send a lesson to any country. They say, listen, we're willing to take on Britain for money. So if you, Slovakia, want to leave, or you, Portugal, want to leave, whatever you want to leave, it's not going to be as easy as I think it's going to be.
Just don't pay it.
It's I think that's what people are saying. People are seeing now. It's like, oh, shit, maybe leaving the EU is not so hard, and there's so complicated rules and regulations.
Yeah. Right.
And I agree with you that part of that, having Donald Trump on Bastille Day, and of course it was the 100th anniversary of war, but it was a fuck you. Fuck you, Britain.
Yeah.
You know, like the end of the World War One was here, but they talked about General Pershing and how he was, you know, the commander of the forces over there.
Right.
Yeah. That, but it is like, yeah, you know what? And because Britain is basically keeps sticking its head in and out of its own asshole trying to figure out what's going to happen with Brexit. And because we don't have leadership, we don't have anyone definitive
British,
to go, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we deal with Brexit. Here's how we do it. Here's how we save Britain. Yeah. Here's how we guarantee. And I think it's all about confidence now because, you know, as expats, we're always watching our pound.
Yeah.
And up and down against the dollar, and I'm traveling back to North America tomorrow, and I'm just, you sort of look and go, fuck. Like, I remember as a Canadian, then it was 2.2 to the Canadian dollar, and that was great. And now it's going back at, like, 1.3. And,
Right.
Yeah. It's
well, that's what you did back to the leadership thing with May. I mean, I saw that on TV in the hotel. It was at the G20. May plans to, what was the wording? May plans to challenge Donald Trump on climate change.
Yeah.
Mm. And she's a Tory. And he's, you know, I know he's not like a proper conservative, but the I love how people. One of my favorite moments of the campaign trail, they had the, he in Michigan, he had a black preacher open up for him. He's like, "Don't y'all love the fact that Donald Trump loves the Bible and loves Jesus Christ?" And I was just laughing. Like, of course, no, he doesn't. What are you talking? Well, anyway, that was a diversion. But she comes out with this: "I'm going to challenge Donald Trump on climate change." He's like, "This is why you're going to lose."
Yeah, she.
You don't need to be challenging the president of the United States.
She's
going to
She's going to lose, and I think. But British politics is not like American politics. It's not presidential. It's collective. They're behind closed doors. There will be a leader that will come out of the Tory Party.
The Tory Party.
Yeah.
Not that, we can't have Corbyn.
No.
That's not going
to
happen.
Well, Corbyn is already the leader. There will have to be labor. There will have to be a leader that will come that will bring the Tories together.
Yes.
But I mean a person, an adept politician, someone who wants a good political career knows that the current climate is a shit show. Right. Why would you jump in to be the circus master of a shit show?
Yeah, because there's got to be a Napoleon somewhere.
Well, there's got to be, but why would you want to take the reins now? Why wouldn't you want to wait for everything to collapse and fall apart and start your new vision? Because basically, Cameron's like, yeah, see ya, fuckers, I'm out of here.
But don't you think it's collapsing already? I mean,
I think it's totally collapsing.
It's a complete split. I mean,
you got jobs going to Berlin. You got jobs going to Frankfurt. You got Paris wooing banks. Yeah. They're saying that they could lose, you know, 15,000 to 20,000 people in the city.
Right.
And you know, I got a lot of friends who work there, and you know, there's a lot of we have such an opportunity here, and there's such an opportunity to be the transient point of Britain and Britain to Europe. So, you know, why?
Yeah, but
fuck
you
it up?
Said you say is there going to be somebody who's going to step up, and why would they step up now when things are this bad? The way the system works is you're penalized for stepping in too early. You're called a traitor and a backstabber. It's a different system.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So there's somebody there. I don't know if there's anybody there because the political system is so piss poor in this country.
I was at a gig in Newcastle. One of the things for this Blake thing I'm working on is I'm interviewing. I'm interviewing Vox Pops, and I'm saying, "What was your first British hero?" Like for me, it's the Beatles, right? And I was up in Newcastle, and I was asking this couple, I said, "Hey, what would you consider a British hero?" And like, well, I don't think the term hero really should apply nowadays, because like the very and she ended up calling me racist. She said the question was racist.
And old was she, in her 20s?
We're talking about mid-20s.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and I mean, it's funny if it just happens at the university, but this kind of mentality has shaped policy.
Yeah.
And so, like, we actually live in a world where, like, nobody, to even say that you want the hero, or, like, the world needs a hero is, like, well, you're considered a lunatic.
Well, people
but Trump, Trump was a hero for me because I thought we were never going to wake up from this politically correct nightmare. And so when I would see the man say, "Oh, I know, you're such a perfect little reporter, never heard any bad words. Oh, yeah, look at him, so perfect." I thought, that's it.
Right,
that's the first thing we need is we need somebody to acknowledge the errors in the system. And to come, like he did, like come in like a wrecking ball and just basically like expose it for the fraud that it is. Climate change on down. And then we can start to rebuild something. So he's done a good job at breaking it down. Now he's got to. And I think some people make a very good point when they say, you know, he needs to start off with some domestic stuff. Like
healthcare?
I don't know. Healthcare. Well, I don't know. I don't know if any country can do it like Britain did. I love the NHS because, you know, you save like a lot of fucking money when you get tonsillitis or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it can work for a country.
Well, it's funny because
like
Trump said on that chat with a journalist on Air Force One that solving the healthcare problem, the only thing more difficult than solving the healthcare problem is trying to solve the Palestinian-Israeli crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I sort of think it comes to a point because they just did this study of laziness and they counted steps and it was how many steps that people took. And it found that America, well, they take the average worldwide average was 4,961 steps a day. And they did this
walking steps.
They did this by a Stanford University tracked 717,000 mobile phones somehow.
Wow.
So they tracked all this. The UK averages 5,444 steps a day. We're quite active. Mm-hmm. America does 4,774 steps a day, but there's a huge divide between the fittest and the not fittest.
Yeah.
Well, you have Hong Kong led the way, but you've got 28% of Americans are clinically obese.
Right.
And they also say Saudi Arabia actually follows behind it at 27%, Japan at 5%, and U.S. cats and dogs as well have an obesity of 33%.
Wow.
Right, because they've got emotional problems.
Is there anything to do? I mean, because, you know, Canada doesn't have the same level of obesity, but we're catching up.
I think what needs to happen is we need to have a bunch of female comedians doing brave one-woman shows about learning to love yourself and just send them over to America. And they say, you're fat, and just love yourself for being fat. Mm-hmm. And if anybody shames you, that's the only way to solve this problem.
I think at the end of the
day... One-woman shows?
One-woman shows.
One shows. At the end of the day, the assumption is that being fat is a bad thing. At one time, being fat was a good thing.
Yeah.
Was a good thing. The alternative was starvation. Okay? So... Then what happened?
You're too black and white.
But but that's where it came
starving
from.
Starving at fat.
Because that's what Americans are. I think you're saying that, because first of all, fat is, the way Americans are fat is they, a little bit fat is fat. Like I am about 20, 30, 40 pounds overweight. And most Americans would have said, hey, I'm 40 pounds overweight. Why not be obese, make it a world sport, and become
just a competitive eating, like the Homer Simpson. I'm just gonna get fat, and I'm just gonna go obese.
Go obese, exactly, like Homer Simpson.
But a little caveat there.
Yeah,
you're talking about. So you're saying that America shames people out of fatness more so, because I think you're talking about the cities.
No, fat was a good thing at one time, and the way Americans did it is they took it to a higher level. Like they do everything is to a higher
level.
You mean
the fatter.
When thin is a good thing. Yeah. Americans, and now they're taking it to it. I've read that the number of people who are obese has gone way down.
It's in the cities, apparently it's going down. In the rural and the southern parts of states, it's going way up.
Yeah,
why,
but it's good.
Why is that? Because
New York, because
there's not enough meth in there.
Because the snobs that run the cities and the media dictate the whole. And eventually
it'll hit the countryside.
And then there'll be a point. They go to Taco Bell
But that's a temporary thing because they're behind the trend, behind the curve. Yeah. Eventually, Americans will get super thin. It'll be a problem. There'll be the problem of obesity or something. I don't know what
D-B-city.
The word.
I think a lot of times what I see it as, obesity is linked to poverty. It's linked to economic. Because a lot of times people that are from a lower income they can't afford to buy all the food, all the fresh ingredients, so go to McDonald's.
No, that's not true.
No,
what it is is people used to be fat. The Chester Arthur was fat.
They
were fat.
Taft was fat.
But in those days, it was considered to be a good thing. It was a sign of wealth.
Everybody thought Taft was fat. You got to go back farther to Bruegel.
I don't know who Bruegel is.
You know, the artist.
Okay, I get it. But that was a different thing when
the president.
You're talking about when health rates and infant mortality and all these different rates, where survival was just, it was fucking hard enough.
Yeah.
But now that you have it, where particularly the highest rates of obesity are all in the South. You got the Mississippi, Arkansas, Alabama, places that are large.
Right.
And it's mostly because of socioeoconomic circumstances.
No, it's not. They're not hip to the fact that it's cool to be thin. That's what it is.
Yeah, but
eventually they will be.
So you think that people down in those areas just don't think about health as much?
They don't think that it's a problem. Because they don't know. Like in New York, people think, okay, we're fat, that's a problem. Yeah. It's getting to the South, and eventually they will say there's a problem. But by the time, it's all about what's cool, you know?
You also have New York was a median income of, say, over $100,000 in Manhattan. It's wealth. It's all wealth there. Yeah. So the link is that
He's spot on.
No, he's wrong. Really wrong.
You were? Okay.
He's really wrong because what you're doing is the wrong
coral. I'm fat-shaming poor people?
What is it?
I'm fat shaming.
No, you're
poor
not.
People.
You're just saying there's a correlation.
I'm poor shaming fat people.
There's a correlation. You could say the thinness has to be how close you are to a subway line, and that people who live in Manhattan are closer to a subway line, how high a building you live in. No, what thinness has to do with is it's a cultural. They've experimented with fat, and they love being fat, and now they love being thin. But the word hasn't spread to Mississippi yet, which it will. It has nothing to do. And the fact is that people with money are always on the ahead of the latest trends.
You just proved his point.
No, I'm not.
People with money are always ahead of the latest
trends. No, you're saying it has to do with money. If you gave people in Mississippi money, right, without having them figure out how to get them
Cracker
money,
Barrel.
Right, they'd be even fatter.
Well, having been there and having seen it just in Florida recently and being up the panhandle, I associate and still associate obesity with a level of poverty.
Yes.
Because
associate it because poor people are behind the curve, they don't have.
You got Dr. Phil.
If I can be a bit personal and connect in smoking. Let's bring a smile. I'm a heavy smoker, as you know.
It's a lower class thing now, cigarette smoking.
You talk to some people, they say, well, do the Champix and this and this. But what you really need to do to be able to pull off quitting smoking, I believe, is to have maybe, let's say, 2-3 weeks where you don't have to do any work. You don't have to, you can go off to, on a holiday somewhere. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, if you take an obese person in Mississippi and say, what you need to do is, and you need to wheat grass or whatever the diets are. This is a whole major shift that you have to get out of this.
They don't even know to eat wheatgrass.
When I travel around and I end up, you know, you're done with the gig and you're looking around for places to eat. Usually I'm with people. Oh, there's a sushi place here. There's a, and being from Missouri, it's like I want some place where I can spend ideally no more than a 5 or 7 pounds, and it has to fill me up, which usually means McDonald's. And if I go to one of these rap places or whatever like that, I paid a lot of money for shit that doesn't fill me up. I don't have that city mentality. But I think,
but it's
I think
part of the it's also part of the trans fats that are in there that, that are also leading the obesity, but also make you feel full.
Do you remember the trans in New York? I remember the trans fats. I didn't even know what the hell a trans fat was. Yeah. And they took it out. And I remember, who was the
They're LGBT fats now. Fats.
Yeah, One of those things. But it was in the paper. Oh, you're getting, they're getting rid of trans fats.
They were thin.
No restaurants can serve trans fats. And I remember saying, I don't even know what a trans fat is, but put it back in the food.
Yeah.
I don't want the government coming in and taking shit out of my food.
I agree with that.
So is the government responsible for the obese?
No, just, you know.
I mean, because you ever been on a plane where you have someone who's obese and it's like,
No.
And they're just hanging over. I've had it, and I'm lucky. I've lucked just out. Like, yeah.
What their fat is coming over.
Their fat
side.
Is just hanging over, and it's like you. Mm. What do you? You know, it's like, and they say, okay, you're gonna.
Well, they should
be
forced to buy two seats if they're because there's a choice. But the point is, you know what Oscar Wilde said? Oscar Wilde said that the habits that the rich grow tired of. Mm. They make vices. They declare us to be vices. And that's the thing with fat. Fat used to be a habit of the rich people that they enjoyed. They enjoyed a lot of food because rich people could eat the food and poor people didn't have any food. And now they've made it a vice. So food is a vice.
Eventually, well, I mean, you can also look at, say, tanning. I mean, it used to be in Victoria, tanning.
Oh,
having a tan, having a tan skin in Victoria times meant that you were labor in the field.
Yes, exactly.
The whiter the skin, the higher society you are.
Yeah.
Right.
And now, tanning, I mean, people just tan the hell out of it.
No. It's gone beyond that. It's gone to the next step because now you do not have to be tan. The people who are doing the tans are of a lower class that the upper class
orange
don't feel that. Yeah, orange, yeah. That they've taken this on, this idea that they need to travel just like rich people traveled.
Yeah. Well, the cheapest way to tan is just interracial breeding. Why don't we just do that? You get a permanent tan. Hey, there you go. So I'll touch on one last quick point, which is retirement. They said the average American who's still working has $3,000 saved for retirement. The average American who's near retirement has $12,000 saved.
Wait a second. What's the $3,000?
$3,000 is the average. The average amount that Americans have
that all Americans
saved for retirement.
People
saved
who are like
retirement.
55 years old.
That doesn't
or
seem like a lot, does it?
It doesn't seem like a lot at all, does it?
Yeah. So even I've had $3,000 once in my life.
That's out of 92% of the working households. 38 million of these households have nothing saved.
Right. And that's where you're wrong. Again, Wade, you're wrong.
Okay. This is from the National Institute Retirement Security Study.
Yeah, no, they've got 3,000 in
cash. So suck on that.
What is the average wealth in property that people own? Okay. Could it be 100,000? Every person has the average.
You're right. So it was taken into account all of their bank accounts, the savings, and all the money that they had in their accounts.
But it doesn't include the house that they have that they could probably get some equity out of.
Do you honestly think that somebody owns a house that's worth that much is only going to have $3,000 in the bank?
They might.
They don't
of
have a house.
Of course they do.
Okay,
no.
Well,
yes,
they
do.
How about this? Here's another fact.
No,
that came
that's
out of
the average amount.
Come on,
average.
Outside now. Let's
the
go.
Average.
They also say that 6 out of 10 Americans do not have enough to cover an expense between $500 and $1,000.
Yes, and I agree with that. I could see that. But is that a problem? Because at retirement, the average, and I looked this up, is the average American receives $1,360 a month from retirement.
Social Security. The maximum they can reach is $2,500.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So the average is $1,300. Uh-huh. So in order to have put money aside at 5% interest rate to get $1,300 a month, all right, would have to be over $300,000.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the average American is guaranteed $300,000 worth of savings just for living. Okay. He doesn't have to put that money aside.
Anybody can live.
Yeah. So, the average American has no money, no money in their pocket, but they're going to be getting $1,300 a month. And they have their house.
Were you talking about $3,000 a month?
$3,000.
Just that's
total.
$3,000 total.
No, that's nothing. But $3,000 a month, I could live off that.
Well, comedians.
No, it's not 3,000 a month. They have 3,000 in the bank.
3,000
in the bank. And a huge number. No, I understand this. I'm that way. That's the way I live. I've got no money, but I do have some equity in my house. And
you've
got
some girls.
And I've got some girls who are willing to front me some money. You get the money where you can.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's a very heavy price to pay.
Yes.
But it's available. That's the point. When they say only, $3,000 in savings, it'd be one thing if the whole country were bankrupt and the people weren't going to get the $1,300. Mm. And it would be another thing if people didn't own houses that were worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. So do not worry, Wade.
Don't worry. I won't worry. Well, we've come to sort of the end of the show, and this is the time where you guys can plug. You got Edinburgh? Yeah. Guys both going to Edinburgh this year?
He's going.
I'm going to Edinburgh. I'm doing a show where I take, I've got 23 letters that my mother had sent to me when I first moved to the UK from New York, and I never opened them.
Why didn't you open them?
Well, we're going to find out why I didn't open them. And the show is called Lewis Schaefer, Unopened Letters from My Mother. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to open the letters and read the letters and try to make something funny out of it. And I don't think that that's going to be possible.
Well, I think so. Will, what do you got going on?
Red, White, and Blake documentary. It's a documentary about William Blake. And nearing the end of it, we're off to shoot a few scenes today and hopefully have it released by the 12th of August, the anniversary of his death.
Are you going to be going to Nunhead and to go to Peckham Rye Park?
I am. Indeed.
You are.
And if you know of any 8-year-old boys that would like to play young William Blake as he has his vision of the angels in the trees.
We'll end on solicitation of children. Thanks a lot for listening in, guys.
Thank you, Wade.
thanks for being in, guys.
No worries.
A lot. Cheers.